Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. This is the COVID-19 show for Friday, the 8th of May, 2020. I'm Joe Vicnicki for KFSK News. And today is a day when the state is in its second day of second phase of reopening businesses. Many details outlined about what that means on the State of Alaska's website for COVID-19 resources. You can find out all about that by going online and checking that out, seeing what businesses, organizations, social gatherings are allowed and such. And I'm joined on the line today by Carl Hagerman, the borough's incident commander. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Joe.
What's the latest from the borough standpoint?
Well, just like you just mentioned, we're trying to, again, play catch up on the lots of details that came out of the state yesterday. Just I wanted to give a quick rundown. A lot of people have been signing on to the state's website and looking at all the attachments and guiding their businesses to reopen. So I just wanted to go down the list and talk about the attachments that have changed so that people should go back and look at check those out again to make sure they're up to speed on all of the new changes. So there were revisions made to attachment D for non-essential public facing businesses, attachment E, which is retail businesses, non-essential retail businesses, attachment F, which guides restaurants for dine-in services, attachment G for personal care businesses, attachment F for non-essential, non-public facing businesses, attachment J for fishing charters, K concerns gym and fitness centers, and N, which guides social, religious, and other gatherings. All of those attachments have been modified from previous iterations, so people should go and check those out. As far as I can tell, there were three previous attachments that were not modified, and those are for childcare, lodging and outdoor camps, and interstate travel with and outdoor activities. So attachments I, L, and M don't appear to be changed. But there were new attachments that were put out that guide reopening of libraries, museums, and archives, swimming pools, bars. Attachment Q is concerning bars, theaters, bowling alleys, and bingo halls. All of those businesses are now allowed to open under certain restrictions.
And I talked to Darcy Caples at the Harbor Bar and Keto's Cave this morning, and those two establishments are reopened again with the restrictions outlined by the state. Carl, in terms of libraries, museums, or swimming pools, etc., we heard from the Colossan Museum that they're not at the point of reopening at this point, but with the allowance for being able to open for like Petersburg Public Library and the community center, that's not happening anytime soon either. The borough manager mentioned the gym and pool not expected to open till August at the earliest, right?
Well, you know, yes, he did say that, but he is also asking staff to develop plans for potentially opening sooner than that. It just depends on, you know, there are a lot of restrictions in place. So just like any other business, the library and the Parks and Rec Community Center and the Aquatic Center would have to develop plans on how they would meet those, all those restrictions. So I know it's being looked at. It's a possibility there may be some plans arrived at that would allow those facilities to open sooner. But it really depends on staffing and supplies, just like every other business is going through. The borough needs to answer the questions how we can do that and what it's going to cost.
Okay. All right. And what's the borough's guidance in terms of people going to all these businesses that are slowly reopening with restrictions, face coverings whenever possible and social distancing still?
Well, yes, the attachments have a lot of restrictions, a lot of guidance, and you know, businesses, there are definitely some restrictions that are in place that must be followed. Others are a little looser. The businesses can, you know, request their customers to meet different restrictions. And I would just ask that any patrons just be respectful of businesses that either, you know, are meeting the minimums allowed by the state or going, you know, above and beyond for the protection of themselves and their customers. Please be respectful of those wishes. And, you know, our small businesses in Petersburg really need our support. So if they are requesting that you know, wear a face covering, but it's not in the mandate, please just be respectful and wear a face covering and patronize their business. You know, they need to get back to business. They need to, you know, sell services and goods. And we all really should support them in that. And if they have some provisions that go above and beyond, let's be respectful of that and still visit their businesses and spend our money in those local establishments that really need our support right now.
Okay. Carl, a question about quarantine requirements for intrastate travel that keeps popping up. People are anticipating going between communities with the fishing season coming up. Lots of Petersburg residents heading to Bristol Bay and that. What is your understanding again on whether you have to do a 14-day quarantine if you leave Petersburg and head out to Bristol Bay? Is that a requirement to do another 14-day quarantine, go between Alaska communities, or does it depend on any local requirements? Or
you hit right on it, Joe. It's the state's mandate for intrastate travel, so travel within the state, does not require a 14-day quarantine, a strict quarantine. If there are smaller communities up north along Bristol Bay that fishermen need to go through to get to the fishing grounds, they very well may have additional restrictions in place. That's not information that the EOC here in Petersburg has on every community up there, but it's really important for the fishermen to research this, to call ahead, talk to EOCs or the authorities in each of these communities that they would have to visit, and find out if there are additional restrictions that they need to be following and might really mess up their plan to, you know, hit the beach and start take off on their boat right away. You know, they really need to look into that and make sure that there isn't a quarantine that they'll have to meet when they get to their destination.
Okay. And I hope to have some of the representatives from the seafood processing companies that operate here in Petersburg on this show at some point. But Carl, do you have any updates in terms of the local fishing season here and what's being done to prepare for the workforce that's coming in or the outside fishing fleet that will be basing out of Petersburg during the season?
Yeah, there's a lot of activity on that. The processors continue to refine their plans. Both the larger processors in Petersburg, Trident and Icicle, have stated a few times that their protective plans are living documents, and they are continuing to refine them and improve them as time goes by and different requirements pop up, or just the knowledge and the level of information about how to go about having a processing season in consideration of COVID-19. So they're doing a very good job. They are trying to isolate, or they are isolating workers before they come to Alaska. Icicle is doing testing in Washington State, keeping their workforce segregated for a couple days until a negative result comes back for anybody heading this way. And then they put them on a plane and after they get to Petersburg, they're also quarantined, and I believe their goal is to test them again after they get to Petersburg on their own. They're looking for supplies to do that. I don't think that's fully outfitted yet, but the influx of workers hasn't fully started yet either. So they've got a little bit of time, but their plan is to, once those workers get to Petersburg, to do some additional testing and complete quarantining on their own facilities as well. And then throughout the season, their goal is to segregate their workforce as much as possible from the rest of the community, so there isn't any chance of their workforce being impacted or the community being impacted.
Okay.
Of course, if their workforce is, gets substantially sick, like some of the meatpacking plants that we're seeing in the lower 48, that could be disastrous for their company. It could also be disastrous for the fleet. If they don't have processing workers to, process the fish that are coming in, what's going to happen? It's the market might slow down quite a bit, and that could impact the fishermen too. So it underscores the need for everybody to continue to practice good social distancing, hygiene, wear face coverings, and anytime you can, social distance. It's extremely important for our economy that we continue to do those things and protect all of us, because if we have a breakdown in that system of fishing and processing, then our economy is going to, fail, even in light of all the activity that we've done. So it's very important. I think that people need to be aware of that and understand that just because we start the season doesn't mean that it's going to go smoothly unless we keep the protections up.
I want to circle back around to one past question, which we now have an answer to indirectly, and it was a past listener had asked about testing cases and how they would be reported for seasonal workforce. We heard about the case this past week of a positive test in Cordova, that person on seasonal workforce with Ocean Beauty. And the state is reporting that as an out-of-state case, so that's how they're going to be proceeding. The case test person is correlates with where that person comes from and not from. So, for instance, if we had a seasonal worker test positive here in Petersburg, they're from out of state, that won't show up on Petersburg's numbers, according to how the state is going forward. So answer that question there from a couple weeks back, I think.
Right. Yeah. So that's good to know, but it's also, I want to point out that even though a seasonal worker that may not live here might be from Washington State, that case might be attributed to Washington State, we will still know about it right away. It will still be news in Petersburg, and we will share that information with the community. Just because the case is attributed to Washington State doesn't mean it won't affect us. So we'll share that information just like we have with other cases here in Petersburg.
Okay. Thanks, Carl. Anything else before I move on to other guests?
No, I think that's it. I did want to mention, bring up the work session that is going to be held next Wednesday afternoon at 1:30 with the state. We've got some contact with Dr. Zink, Dr. McLaughlin, and Dr. Jilly, some of the top medical minds in our state, who are willing to have a conversation with Petersburg through a program that they call ECHO. And it's going to be a very good presentation about the latest information on COVID-19, testing plans for the future in the state, and allow people to ask questions, our assembly to ask questions, and others of this panel, so that we can get smarter about COVID-19 and hopefully help us plan our future in Petersburg in relation to the disease.
Okay, and the public can tune into this?
Yes, there will be some information coming out. Anybody that wants to participate will be able to sign in or pre-register and actually post some questions to the panel days ahead of time, so that the panel can be prepared to answer questions that come in. But also there will be a question and answer period during the presentation itself. And it is a Zoom meeting. So if when you register, the information to sign in to the meeting will be sent back to you via email, and you'll be able to connect and listen in.
Okay, and we'll look into possibilities about whether we can broadcast that live as well on Wednesday.
Great.
All right, thanks, Carl. Let's move on to the Petersburg Medical Center. Liz Bacom is representative for the hospital today. Hi, Liz.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Pretty good. I have some numbers and a couple other things I wanted to talk about.
Great.
Let me pull up the numbers. We have to date tested 178 people, which is about 5% of the population of Petersburg based on the numbers of 3,200. We have no active cases and 18 pending. We still have the three recovered. And the question about the seasonal workers that test positive, the way I understand is the state dashboard that they put out every day, they update that every day at noon. There will be a separate section for seasonal or transient positives in the state. So we are aware of those. That is not going to be, that'll be pretty transparent.
Okay.
And we'll probably update this if we do have any active cases. I'm not sure how we'll report it, if they'll be seasonal or if they'll just be reported as active cases, because an active case to me is an active case and we just need to be aware of it. But as far as for epidemiology and for contact investigations and all of that, that'll still go on by the state, and that won't stop. And then it's just a matter of the CDC and how they require things to be reported. It's based on your home rather than your permanent residency instead of where you're currently located.
Okay. 178 tests, you said?
178.
Okay. And 18 pending. You said that's
18 are pending, yeah.
5%. Is that 178 different people? Are there?
Yes.
Are there?
Yeah, some people may have had a second test and those people are not being, those tests are not being counted. It's just the individual people that are tested.
Okay.
So that's 178 residents of Petersburg that have been tested.
Okay, 5%. All right. So what else would you like to get the message out about today?
Just enjoy the weekend, get out and enjoy the great weather, and shop local.
Okay, great. All right, let's move on to Erin Michael, public health nurse. Welcome to the conversation. How about you? What do you have to update us on today?
Well, with Mother's Day this weekend, we just want to remind everybody to take precautions to help protect our mothers out in the community. So doing all the things that we should be doing with everyone else, but in particular for our mother, since we're having Mother's Day, keeping that 6-foot distance, wearing facial coverings, and washing our hands, or using hand sanitizer before we go visit mom or grandma, would be a great idea to help protect them. So just wanted to remind people with Mother's Day to take that extra step and try to help protect your moms out there. And then I've got some more information for seniors, ways that you can help seniors during COVID. And so this could be a really hard time, especially since they're considered high-risk category and a lot of them are having to quarantine at home and not go out in the community as much. So just checking in with them, letting them vent and talk to you about how they're feeling about this, because it can be very stressful for them, just like everybody else that's going through this. You can contact your local nursing homes and see if they are in need of PPE, personal protective equipment like masks or anything else. You can support local food banks or programs like that, so like the Salvation Army or Farragut Farm or Mountain View Manor Food Service, see if they're needing assistance. Those are just things that you can do to help your seniors already out and about in our community. So just a reminder that they're considered a vulnerable population, and we just want to honor and respect them and try to help them out as much as possible.
Erin, with the relaxation on some businesses and things opening up, is it recommended that vulnerable populations are out and about going to businesses and circulating the community?
You know, they it's anybody that's a vulnerable population really should be trying to stay at home as much as possible and distance themselves from others. So just because things are opening up doesn't mean your risk as a vulnerable population person goes down. So I would encourage them to continue their current measures as much as possible if they can.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Any other messages you'd like to get out?
Not that I can think of right now.
Okay. Erica Klute-Painter from the Petersburg School District. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Joe. Happy Friday.
You too. What's the latest from you?
Well, another shout out today for our fabulous and amazing teachers and staff during Teacher and Staff Appreciation. Lots of lovely notes and just messages that have been sent to our amazing teachers and staff throughout this week. And we really appreciate people just reaching out, recognizing those efforts as we're moving forward. We are also solidifying plans for graduation, getting pretty excited about that. I think our students are starting to get into this a little more, even though it's not the normal event. They've got some great ideas, and I think we're trying to accommodate some of their need to be, you know, together without being close together. So just for the community to know that we are wanting your participation on May 26th, which is the actual night of graduation, and we're sticking with that. There will be a community parade, and it'll be happening between 6 and 7, and we're going to get a route out, and we want people to come out to their yards and, you know, wave and yell, show signs and whatever you want to do from your yard. And then if you live further off the parade route, then, you know, go ahead and jump in your car and come down and park alongside the road and do the same. So the kids will be in their cars, and they'll be going on their regular kind of a designated parade route, and it'll be an opportunity for everybody to be involved and celebrate them. So more details there, but that's the date and time. So, and I think even the radio station has agreed to help us maybe do a playlist that the kids are going to put together. So that was exciting news. We appreciate that. Just everybody coming together for these kids. So not ideal, but lots of creativity, and the kids are starting to really get into it. So, and we're going to put together a kind of a virtual graduation ceremony as well that will be shared with the community, and everybody will be able to access it and watch it. And that'll be coming out that same night. So on actual graduation night, May 26th. And as I mentioned, Wednesday, just still working with the state Department of Education and the Department of Health and Human Services on kind of a matrix for various reentry options for the fall with schools. So lots of things to consider there with mandates and such, as Carl and everybody else has been discussing. So we're just continuing to work with our state officials and putting together several scenarios and then communicating those with students and families moving forward. So a couple weeks of school left.
Okay, it's hard to believe. The end is almost in sight, but it's moving fast.
Absolutely. It is, for sure.
Okay, and I think we do have a caller. Caller on line one, Mark Martinson. Welcome to the conversation.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Good. How's it going?
Hey, I was a little curious and maybe getting a little annoyed. Our good friend Pete, who died in Seattle there last March, after his death, his son put out a nice little letter, you know, gave him the rundown of what happened. And, of course, he was medevaced out of Petersburg, and he contracted the virus from his roommate. But what he wanted people to know at the time of Pete's death, Pete only had one or two more months to go anyway, with or without the virus. And I was wondering if there are any stats out there, anybody knows that if the U.S. keeps a breakdown of this kind of thing. You can go to the Sweden website. Their average age of the victims is 81. You go over to the Italian website, and they see 99.1% of the victims had underlying serious health issues, and their average was 79. So it's a question that needs to be brought out there, or at least said. I mean, even if the U.S. gets up to 100,000 deaths, that's 3% of the average death rate in the U.S. of 3 million, which is actually less than 1% of the population. Anyway, just a question I had. Anybody got any thoughts? Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, a question about stats in terms of people who die from COVID-19 and percentage of the population.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, I mean, the way we talk around here is like young kids are dropping dead, and if they get it, it's like a flu or a bad cold. They get over it pretty quick, seems to. So anyway, that's all I had.
Okay, thanks for the call. And that phone connection there doing some weird things. Aaron, Michael, can you handle that at all in terms of stats? Or Liz Bacom?
I was just trying to go. If you go, there's several websites where you can look at death rates, and it can break it down by age. It goes by gender, by previous health conditions. So it just depends on, you know, what particular thing you want to look at. So I'm just going to see if they've got the most current one here. Maybe Liz can talk while I'm looking it up.
Yeah, one of the things I want to talk about is testing and how it needs to be broader. I think that kind of skews things because we're testing only at the beginning, only the sickest of the sickest. And so that's how your data started getting built. And then as you start going out and testing more and more people, we will find probably that our infectivity rate or the people who've been exposed to COVID will change quite a bit as we test more broadly. And those are good points. And people with comorbidities that are older, that aren't in as good a health, are likely to have a more negative outcome. They could get sick in a worse condition. They could end up being hospitalized. And if they get put on a ventilator, they have a higher risk of not living, actually. So those all kind of add up to that age bracket of the older people over 75. But we have to remember that a lot of the people that are taking care of those people that are over 75 are the working class, the people between 20 and 60. And so, you know, it isn't just about, oh, the people that are between 20 and 60 aren't going to have as negative an outcome, but they're also going to have a less severe case, possibly, most likely. In some cases, they're asymptomatic, and yet they can still transfer the virus over to somebody who is at higher risk for a serious outcome. So, I mean, when we look at how dangerous the virus is in the communities, in our community, we've been very fortunate. And part of the reason is our aggressiveness in trying to keep people, you know, wearing masks and staying inside and social distancing and all those things that everybody's trying to do. But it's important to remember that when you look at the statistics for the state of Alaska, and it's rather interesting, the age range of people in Alaska, the majority of them are between 20 and 40, if you add up all those numbers. And so those are the people that are out in the community working and doing things, and and possibly taking care of their family members, or they have kids who may become infected and they may not have any symptoms at all. So really what we need to do is test. And it's so important to test broadly. And as we've moved along in this journey, that's a pretty rocky road for sure, we're learning that the symptoms are a lot different now than what they were when they was first identified in January.
And Liz,
if you remember, it was just a cough, difficulty breathing, and a fever, you know. So now we're looking at everything and trying to grab all of those super mild presentations so that we can get a better picture of how far this is spreading in communities and across the country.
Liz, those ages you brought up, those are for people, positive cases, not deaths, though, right?
No, I'm talking about positive cases.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you look at the state of Alaska updates their page every day, and I look at their graph on a regular basis, and they, I'm just pulling it up real quick so I can, it's total statewide cases by age group. And so we have, you know, only 1.8% of the population is positive that's over 80, but the majority are between the ages of 20 and 60. I would say more than half are between the ages of 20 and 60, and 60 to 69, 14%. 30 to 39 is almost 20%. So, you know, we've got a large number of people that are working out in the community, maybe not having good health care or good benefits to stay home and still get paid while they're sick. And that's where the risk is. And some of those people are working in, they're neighbors, they're taking mail for people, they're cleaning other people's houses, they're doing two or three jobs at one time, especially now that they've lost maybe their primary income. So we really have to look at the impact of a healthy population that can transfer the virus to an unhealthy population.
Okay. Aaron, Michael, do you have anything to add? Nope. Okay. Let's go to Liz Cabrera with the Petersburg Economic Development Council. Liz, what's the latest from you?
Joe, well, first of all, NOAA has finally released a funding amount for fisheries-related assistance, to fisheries-related business assistance. And it sounds like about $50 million is coming to Alaska under that program. They're going to run it similarly to what they did for the fisheries disaster program for pink salmon last year. And that money is going to go to Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission. The state's going to set up a spending plan. I believe some percentage of that will be direct assistance, and then they'll have other categories. So we'll keep an eye on that as it develops. But right now we just have that initial allocation, which is $50 million.
And Liz, I wanted to mention too on that, that is broadened out. It's not just commercial fishing. It's also charter businesses and processing companies and some aquaculture as well.
Correct. It's fisheries related, not just commercial fishing. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks
so
for bringing that up.
Details to follow on how to apply for that, but it's not an immediate thing.
No.
Okay.
Right. So, like I said, right now we just have the allocation, and then that money will be turned over to the commission, and then they'll work with the state to set up a spending plan. And then probably after that sometime, we'll have some information on applications.
Okay.
And I also wanted to mention again on the Borough's COVID-19 Info Hub webpage, there's some really good information in there on reopening, including signs for businesses to use, and just a curated list of good information for businesses as they reopen, and good practices, and just some suggestions on things they could do, and helps narrow down the stream of information that businesses are trying to sort through. So I would just encourage people to check that out as you're reopening. And I think the other day, Joe, we talked about unemployment mm-hmm. numbers. So nationwide, they released numbers today. And so across the country, it's 14.7% unemployment. That's the new number as of April. But they don't release a number for state and local unemployment until May 22nd. So right now, we're only having access to March numbers, and that really didn't show any substantial change as a result of COVID. So until we get those April numbers, I probably won't have good information on that yet.
Okay.
And then lastly, as you know, PEDC is running two assistance programs right now. One of them is a sales tax rebate program, and another one is the PPP loan incentive grant. And starting tomorrow, we're going to extend the application period for those to May 22nd, and also expand out the criteria so that it's not just limited to those non-essential businesses. So we're going to broaden the applicant pool and expand the criteria so other businesses can apply.
Okay.
And the details are on the borough website.
All right. Great. Thanks, Liz.
Sure thing.
All right, we do have another caller on the line. I believe it's Marlene Cushing, line one. Hi, Marlene.
Hi. I'm calling to talk about the issue that Mark Martin mentioned about.
There's a weird feedback thing going on with phones here. But we are getting you. Do your best to bring up what you want.
Okay. What Mark was mentioning was something in public health we call years of potential life loss. So if a two-year-old dies, you know, they've lost 80, 85 years of potential life. If someone who's 100 dies, they haven't lost as many. But there's a study out of University of Glasgow that just came out, and they were looking at this very thing for COVID, and their conclusions looking at ages and all the medical problems people had is on average men were dying 13 years ahead of when they would normally, and women were dying at least 11 years if when they averaged it out. So some would be losing a lot more than that, and some would be losing a lot less than that.
Okay, great. I think I fixed the feedback problem while you were saying that too. So,
okay.
But I think we got your gist. Thank you, Marlene.
All right. Bye-bye.
And bye. All right. Bear with me as I work through continuing problems with the fun of technology here. Okay, let's go back around the horn real quick. Top of the order to Carl Hagerman with the Borough. Anything else to add on this show for Friday?
Well, Joe, I think just a general statement, you know, and again, in referring to Mark Bartson's comments, you know, it is true that, you know, the older people or vulnerable people are most affected by COVID-19, and that lots of younger people that get it don't seem to get it. But we don't have very much information on how everybody reacts. It's not a sure thing that if you get it and you're young, you're going to be just fine. It's not that way. And, you know, I think there's a lot of justification for getting back to normal, just looking at the numbers and people justifying that it's okay to not wear a mask or not social distance because only a certain percentage is going to die. In my way of thinking, even one death is too many, and we're already over 70,000 for the country attributed to this. And to me, the fact that people already have medical conditions and they're going to die anyway within a short period of time doesn't really give me a whole lot of comfort. I lost both my parents this last year, and I'd give anything to have some more time with them. So, you know, when you're talking about people's lives, it's very hard to justify that, you know, your actions, you know, and potentially ending their lives sooner is okay because they're going to die anyway, doesn't really carry much water with me. We're really trying to protect everybody in Petersburg and extend everybody's lives throughout this. So some closing thoughts. Other than that, on a brighter note, want to wish everybody a happy Mother's Day weekend, and hope everybody gets out and enjoys the sunshine.
Yeah, thanks, Carl, and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there and to people who've lost mothers, and keep them in your thoughts. Let's go back to Liz Bacon with the Medical Center. Any closing thoughts?
No, I think Carl put it perfectly. Thank you.
Okay, and Aaron Michael.
I would concur.
Okay, thanks. How about Erica Clute Painter?
I'll add my vote to Carl's comments and just wish everybody a happy Mother's Day weekend and enjoy the sunshine.
Okay, and Liz Cabrera.
I'll just take a different tact and thank you, Joe, for offering these opportunities for everyone to get the information out.
You're welcome. The next one will be on Monday, same time, 12:30 in the afternoon. And happy Mother's Day to everyone. Enjoy the sunny weather this weekend. You're listening to KFSK in Petersburg.